Thanks for listening to Air Talk while Larry is away. I'm Libby Denkman with you right here on 89.3 KBCC. If you have a problem with sexual harassment at work, the first advice you usually get is to go to human resources to take care of the complaint. But in the wake of the Me Too movement and revelations about powerful men subjecting women to harassment and sexual assault in the workplace, many are wondering, why did HR departments fail to protect these employees? Does the field of HR need a major overhaul? Our next guest has been looking into the way HR professionals are handling the Me Too era, and her name is Caitlin Flanagan, contributing editor at The Atlantic, and her most recent piece is titled The Problem with HR. Hi, Caitlin. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So if you have an HR story, first off, I just want to put the number out there. Give us a call at 866-893-5722 to weigh in. Maybe you work in HR, you have confronted sexual harassment in your office, or you're an employee who has an experience and shared and can share how HR handled a sexual harassment case in your life. You can call 866-893-5722. Also go on our Facebook page, tweet us at AirTalk. You can go to kbcc.org, the AirTalk page there. So, Caitlin, tell me about this conference that sort of was your major scene for your big story in The Atlantic. It is a convention that involves HR professionals, I understand. What was the conversation like there about Me Too?
Well, it went during sort of the very height of the Me Too movement. I wanted to find a lot of HR professionals in one spot that I could interview. And what I found was that they were very concerned about the Me Too movement, but in the way that any other person I talked to that wasn't involved in fixing the problem, they were very locked into certain protocols and certain things that are required from them at work. And they felt that those who really wanted to do something extraordinary felt they didn't have a tremendous amount of power to do it. If a report was made about a man who was in greater power than the HR person was, for example, then HR just felt that all they could do was write up what they had learned, you know, conduct an investigation and hand it up the line. And oftentimes women would end up telling me that made things worse for them because now the person they'd reported on knew that she made the report. So it seemed that there was a tremendous kind of traffic jam in HR, where people go into HR a lot and explain a lot of problems that they're having, but depending on how much power the company gives their HR department, it may not go any further than that.
That really blows my mind that you were at this major conference, thousands of HR professionals, right at the height of the Me Too movement and the revelations that were coming out about that, and you were not hearing HR professionals themselves saying, hey, oh my gosh, this was something that we really need to fix. We really need to tackle. We need to make big changes. That wasn't the conversation. I'm really shocked that they didn't think that their field needed reform. Were you surprised by that?
Initially, I was extremely surprised. But then the more I learned, I realized I was being quite naive about the role and function of HR. You know, people don't normally go into HR because they're activists. They don't normally go in because they want to diagnose problems within a company. They don't normally go in because they want to fight systemic problems in corporate America. They typically go in because they're people, the kind of people. They like talking to people. They like the world of business, but they don't tend to like the cutthroat profit and loss part of business. And they haven't at all entered the field in the guise of reforming the field or reforming offices. They've been given objectives, which is to, you know, meet certain targets of taking reports and passing information along. But for them, for us as a country or culture, to expect them to put their badge on the line every time and to face getting fired every time from a job that's a very mid-level job, I think that we've invested them with far more power than they actually have or are willing to exert.
Yeah. Again, if you have an HR story, if you have taken a complaint to your HR department regarding sexual harassment or another issue at work, and you want to share what happened, 866-893-5722 is our number to weigh in. Facebook, social media, any way you want to comment on that, 866-893-5722 to call in. Caitlin Flanagan, a contributing editor at The Atlantic, has a big piece out right now in that magazine about the problem with HR. That's the title, and the issue of whether or not you can trust human resources to be an agent for change in a company. And as Caitlin just mentioned, it's not necessarily a good way to go about actually preventing sexual harassment. Whether or not employees can feel comfortable bringing their complaints forward when human resources is maybe not incentivized to be an advocate for the employees. 866-893-5722 to weigh in on this issue. I'm Libby Denkman, in for Larry Mantle. We are going to be back after a very short break with more on this important topic. Air Talk on KPCC. I'm Libby Denkman, in for Larry. Today, while Larry takes a few days off for vacation, Caitlin Flanagan with The Atlantic is joining me to discuss her reporting on human resources in the wake of Me Too. And we are taking your calls at 866-893-5722. We have Stephen on the line from Glendale. And Stephen, you have a story to share about having an issue with HR at your company. What happened?
Yes, thank you for having me. My issue was that the Human Resources Department ultimately reported to the Chief Administrative Officer, who was my supervisor. And so I could not file a complaint regarding the sexual harassment that I was experiencing between me and the Chief Administrative Officer, because ultimately there were cases of retaliatory firings taking place, and the person who would ultimately be responsible for taking care of my complaint was my direct supervisor.
Wow, so reporting would basically be going directly to your supervisor, who was also involved in the issue. Am I getting that right?
Exactly. And there were previous cases of retaliatory firings and cover-ups that had taken place, so I knew exactly what was going to happen. But it does get to a point where, as an individual and the respect that you have for yourself and even the organization, you decide, you know, I am going to say something about it. I'm going to speak up, especially because of the cover-ups that I'm seeing throughout the organization.
Yeah.
And you do at times suffer the consequences.
But Stephen, did you consider, getting a lawyer, lawyering up and maybe filing a lawsuit about this? Because it just seems like you were caught in a total catch-22.
We are in the process, yes.
Okay. So there is some type of legal action, because, again, it just sounds outrageous for that to be your situation. Stephen in Glendale, thanks again for your call. And Enzo in Newport Beach is on the line. Hi, Enzo. What's your experience with HR?
So I actually was HR for a large retailer. And in fact, where I found the position to be was more of like a corporate propagandist. In fact, I remember one instance where we have a budget on how much we can give for raises. And so it wouldn't matter if everybody was overperforming or underperforming, as long as we could keep the raise underneath the budget of the raise. So sometimes we would downgrade people just because it wasn't in the budget to give them a raise, whatever the budget raise was that year.
Wow, that's brutal. So not at all there to be an advocate for employees, entirely to watch the bottom line. Enzo, thanks for your call in Newport Beach. Kent in Los Alamitos, what did you want to say about human resources and your experience in the workplace?
Well, in my experience, I was working for a small photography studio, and I was being trained by the wife of the husband of the company, and I was experiencing some inappropriate contact and what felt like sexual advances. So in my case, the only person that I could have gone to was the husband, who was the owner of the company. So without a human resources department, I was forced to quit.
Yeah, Kent, that sounds like a really specific and terrible situation. I'm so sorry you had to go through that. Kent in Los Alamitos, thanks for your call. Again, something specific, I think, to smaller companies that don't have any HR protocols in place. Caitlin Flanagan with The Atlantic on the line. Caitlin, I get an eye roll nowadays when people say, you know, I have this concern, and the reaction is maybe, hey, have you talked to HR about that? But that can't be what human resources wants to have happen, right? That distrust can't be assisting them in their goal, which is ultimately to prevent liability for the company, right?
Right. It's very much in their best interest to get all of these reports because it helps them to protect the company from liability, from you leaving and filing a lawsuit, as the caller was doing. And the one big takeaway that I took from it is that if you are getting harassed, you do want to make the report because if it ends HR, because if it ends up in a lawsuit, juries tend to look very unfavorably on someone who didn't at least give the company a chance to make things better. So if you're thinking that it's going to go in a legal direction, you should make that original complaint. It's better for you in front of a jury. But that's my dog adding in.
Does he have any opinion on human resources policy?
So very angry about them.
Yeah, I can tell. So Caitlin Flanagan, and just really quickly, I want to give out the number again. If you have a story about HR that you want to share, 866-893-5722 is our number here at AirTalk, 866-893-5722. You make the point in your Atlantic piece, Caitlin, that, you know, HR is here to defend against lawsuits, reduce liability. But in a lot of ways, those goals can sometimes be the same, right? I mean, if there is a problem employee who is continually exposing the company to risk or is exposing the company to a large lawsuit because of his or her activity harassing another employee, that HR individual definitely wants to take care of that. I mean, is it a problem that the HR department is there to reduce liability ultimately?
It's not, but I think anybody who's gone through HR training around sexual harassment often feels that it's silly, that the videos are way out of date and that they're having to sign all these documents, and who doesn't know the sorts of things that the training is teaching? And all that is just liability prevention. That's just so that if you ever, anyone in the company ever has a lawsuit, they can say, well, look, this guy signed this, he saw that, he knew he was on his own. You're going to have to sue him on his own instead of suing the company. So a lot of the red tape and a lot of the parts of HR sexual harassment prevention that people think is ridiculous and that gets the eye roll, that's because they are not really working in that situation to help you. And the EEOC was very strong about this last year when it examined HR and sexual harassment at work, but too much of this training is just concentrated on saving the company from a lawsuit. It's really not very effective in stopping harassment.
Yeah, Caitlin Flanagan from The Atlantic. We also had a comment on the AirTalk page echoing what you are saying, and it's Belinda who wrote in saying, a friend, an HR professional, recently brought me up short when she said, quote, remember, the entire HR department is there to protect the employer who is paying them. That means if they perceive you as the problem, they will not be your advocates. That was sobering and brought home for me how vulnerable we really are in the workplace. I mean, Caitlin, you describe these people, though, that go into HR. They're mostly women. I was surprised to hear the percentage of women is just beyond, you know, the majority. And they are upbeat people. They are people persons. They are folks who like to talk and to get to know you. So it's not like these are bad people, right? It just seems like they're stuck in a system that incentivizes different behaviors.
If the problem is that people perceive them to be on a par with a union rep, because their door is always open and they always want to know what problems you're having. But a union rep is always and only on your side. The union rep will never even step back a moment from what you have to say, because that person is getting nothing from the company. That person is in an adversarial position with the company if the company is trying to rip you off or hurt you in any way. And people will sort of assume that HR is like a union rep because they really hold themselves out as a place that's going to have a personal connection with you and help you. But that's just not right. They are 100% answerable to the company. You know, not 99.1, it's 100%.
Right. And so, you know, the only alternative I can think of is for shops that don't have unions to hire, you know, outside advocates or consultants. But I just can't see that happening with, you know, a company actually paying for that. Caitlin Flanagan, thank you so much for being on the line with us here on AirTalk. I really enjoyed your article. It's called The Problem with HR. It's in The Atlantic. Caitlin Flanagan, our guest this hour on AirTalk. Thanks again.
Thank you.
It's Libby Denkman in for Larry Mantle this week. Thank you so much for listening. Air Talk concludes just for the day, and Fresh Air is coming up shortly. Stay with us right here on 89.3 KPCC.